This episode of The Unwind is brought to you by Audible. Get your free audiobook download and free 30-day trial by going to audibletrial.com/rolltohit.
Cool. Check 1, 2, 1, 2.
Diggity test.
Yeah.
Word.
Get it.
What's your MC name?
MC Goat.
Do I ever tell you, so Rob's MC name was MC Dreamcast?
Yeah.
And we had a friend who made a diss track, and he was MC Xbox. It was literally the worst feud in history.
What are you talking about? I thought it was fine.
I mean, your verse was better than his.
Oh, I wrecked it.
Come on, MC Dreamcast versus MC Xbox. Like, that's like the whitest, nerdiest thing you could do. He wasn't even a big video gamer.
He only did that so that he could just be the opposite of me.
Yeah, I know, but it was still...
The anti-Rob?
Anti-Rob, yeah. Oh, don't put this on there.
What up, nerds? Welcome to episode 45 of The Unwind, a weekly show where we talk about tech, games, gadgets, and geek culture. Today, we're talking about the New York Times article on Amazon, talking about workplace benefits, whether you should have free food or not, what we've been watching, and also talking about Adblock. My name is Rob Steller.
I'm Sean Thomas.
And I'm Josiah Hills.
So I want to officially make the announcement, right? So we are kind of the brains behind this network that we've been growing.
Brains.
Yes. So we are in the, we have rebranded Commentist Block. So we're not Commentist Block anymore. We are now the
change
Commentist.
Your URLs, yes. And your bookmarks.
Everything's right changed. Yeah, everything's changed.
It doesn't matter because nobody could spell block.
Yeah. So one of the reasons why we switched. So we are now the Commentist. That is our official name. We are also growing from 2 to 6 shows, which is really, really awesome. There's a show on veganism, a show on having positive mindset and continuous improvement, show on soccer. There's a show...
Football.
A show on hip-hop and politics, and also our, of course, Roll the Hit show, which is Dungeons & Dragons. So be sure to check all those out. You can find all those on thecommentist.com.
And expect quality.
Yes.
We're only top notch at the Commentist.
Yes.
Commentist Block was a little shady.
It was shady.
I don't know if I totally trusted
the Commentist. No, the Commentist Block, the guys on that would just like chew in the microphone and stuff. Like, it was very unprofessional.
It was, gosh. And their video, geez. That one guy who always had his hands up, I never really understood what was going on.
Yeah, I know. He always needed a haircut, too.
But the Commentist.
The Commentist is the real deal. These are professionals doing professionally made podcasts.
Take an audio journey with us through the world.
All right, yeah, let's start.
All right, so first topic of the day, I'm sure many of you have heard of this, but the New York Times put out an article this week, basically...
They slammed Amazon.
Yeah,
they eviscerated them.
It's crazy. So they came out with just this scathing article about what it was like to work inside Amazon's corporate offices.
So tell us, what is it like, Ron?
Thank you. Very good question, Josiah. So
they get paid in packages.
So Amazon recently became the most valuable retailer in the country, passing Walmart, which is a big deal because they make ridiculous amounts of money. They hire a lot of people. But the article basically, it was, well, I'll preface this by saying, like, they set out to do something very specific, and it was very one-sided, and I don't think they made any attempt.
The New York Times.
The New York Times, yeah. And I don't think they made any attempt to try to get a balanced story out of this, right? So the article came out and basically talked about the work environment at their corporate headquarters and other offices, I guess. Basically just talking about the poor treatment of employees, saying that they were pushed too far, that they just really didn't care about them. I mean, they basically were saying, like, there was no mercy for employees who, like, had health issues or suffered any family loss. Like, they were expected to just, like, come to work the next day. Like, there was one, I guess, this woman had a miscarriage or something, and then, like, basically had to report the next day, like, everything was fine. Like, crazy stuff like this.
Well, you didn't have the baby, so you don't need anything.
But the article interviewed all the people who had left Amazon, and clearly... were not happy about the time that they spent there. I mean, they talked about this very hostile, like, dog-eat-dog world there, where basically you had to tattle on other employees and basically call people out. Working 75-plus hours a week was pretty standard. You'd get emails after midnight and expect a response then, and then have like text saying like, why aren't you responding to this? Accounts of like people seeing other people crying at their desk, like just really depressed, like using drugs, things like that. Anyway, so needless to say, this elicited a huge response from the internets. From New York Times had like, I don't know, 5,000 comments, I think, on that article. Reddit had another thousands. There were a bunch of other sites that, you know, had forums that were talking about this. And what was interesting is you had people commented on both sides, right? So there were some people who came out and were saying, and obviously, you know, this is random people on the internet. You don't know if they're telling the truth or not, but
assuming it's probably true.
Yeah, so assuming that they were actually either current or former Amazon employees, they were saying, you know, some came out and said, no, this is not what it's like. Like, I love working there, like all the stuff. But a lot of people came out and said, this isn't even how bad it is there.
Yeah.
Jeff Bezos came out, the head of Amazon came out and put out I think it was an internal email, but it got picked up. But one of the quotes from it is, this article goes further than reporting isolated anecdotes. It claims that our intentional approach is to create a soulless dystopian workplace where no fun is had and no laughter is heard. Again, I don't recognize this Amazon, and I very much hope you don't either. But, you know, the damage was kind of already done.
Was that published in the Washington Post by any chance?
The damage was kind of already done. I mean, they also just talked about how, like, there's just algorithms. I guess Bezos is a very, like, data-oriented person. Yeah. So there are just, like, algorithms that basically determine whether you're an effective employee or not. And they have, you know, rankings. And basically, once you fall off of that, you're kind of just pushed out. So a lot of the comments, I was reading through a lot of the top comments on these sites, and a lot of people were like, oh, you know, I love Amazon because I get all my whatever there, but now I'm not going to use them because they treat their employees terribly, da da da. Which reminded me a lot of like Walmart, right?
Exactly,
so Walmart faced this exact same thing, but they still see soaring revenues year over year. Like, clearly did not really do anything to them.
Right.
Granted, you know, well, there were some.
I don't shop at Walmart.
So, I don't either, which is interesting.
So that's potentially hundreds of dollars that they're not getting.
half a trillion dollars that they bring in every year.
Minus a couple hundred dollars.
They're very upset about that.
Think about all the underwear sales. But the reason why, I mean, do you guys not shop at Walmart because of unfair labor practices, or do you not shop at Walmart because you don't want to go to Walmart? Not, I don't even mean
no,
just going
actually,
to a place.
No, it actually, is because it is a purposeful decision.
It was.
I disagree with their business practices.
Really?
Okay. So now it comes up, you know, if all of this was true about Amazon, would you stop using Amazon? I mean, I use Amazon for pretty much anything I can get.
That would be much harder for me to do. I don't know. I'd have to see, like, what aspect of this is real. You know, and I'm more concerned with the plight of blue collar workers, mm-hmm. and rather than the, you know, so with, and I don't know, you know, I seem to be applying arbitrary ethical, you know, conditions
right.
to it, you know, because with Walmart you can say, oh well, you know, they actively put other companies out of business, and like literally that's what Amazon did to diapers.com.
Right.
They had an algorithm to and a script basically that automatically undercut diapers.com.
Mm.
Like, it was a machine doing it.
Yeah.
You know, so, it's hard to say. Would I stop using Amazon? I guess I'd take a wait-and-see approach, and I guess maybe, you know, that's... I'm more accustomed to the idea of, well, you have to adopt and adapt, rather, or potentially go extinct. You know, with that said, I don't feel like their business practices, especially at the corporate level, you know, with the white collar workers, you know, you hopefully know what you're getting into,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully you're skilled enough that if you don't like it, you can move on, right? Like if I just need a job that pays minimum wage and I have to go work for Walmart, or in this case maybe Amazon in their warehouses or something like that, and I don't really have a lot of options, I would be more inclined to stand up for that than to say, well, here's this person with an MBA and they're crying at work.
Right.
Fucking figure out your life balance and don't work there anymore.
So it's interesting because I was bringing this up with Sean before we started the show today, just that, you know, these are highly skilled people for the most part who are in these positions. And it's hard for me to believe. I don't know. So basically my argument was like, if you work there for 7 years and you're complaining about it, then it's kind of your fault for not leaving when you could have. And Sean, obviously you had a different opinion. Like, I feel like if you have that skill set, and especially like, you know, working and getting employed by Amazon, you probably have a good shot of finding a job somewhere else.
So, I mean, okay, so this is a key difference. My only issue, and I don't know, just, I guess it kind of comes off as condescending, but the main difference we're separating, the white collar versus blue collar, is, and, you know, as condescending it is, it kind of makes sense, the idea that, you know, blue collar workers generally have less agency. That's why you see unionization versus, yeah, you don't see as much unionization in skilled workers. If anything, you see more of how can I negotiate my salary to be higher? Like, it's more individual based. But the question is, well, there's two parts to this. First of all, if you are this talented, do these kind of practices improve your output? Is this just an, yeah, alternative motivator that just makes a better company? And also related to that, I mean, you guys said, you know, just get your shit together, but I feel like that's kind of a cop-out. I don't think there should be any reason why you can't argue that a company shouldn't be doing these kind of practices. And the idea that anyone can just leave a company, even if they're smart, it's not that easy for a lot of people, sure, to just...
Yeah, you can't flip a switch and go.
And just because you have an MBA doesn't mean you have free reign to go wherever you want. And who knows, if you leave on bad terms because you don't like it, you might not get a letter of recommendation.
Sure, sure.
It's not as simple as just saying, well, you know,
those are
smart.
Good points, but I mean, you know, if we're talking about Amazon corporate headquarters that's in Seattle, you have Microsoft. A lot of opportunity in Seattle as far as tech sector goes and that sort of thing. I know it's not flipping a switch and just blinking your eyes and making it so, but granted, they do have a lot more opportunities than the average person, very likely. On top of that, I mean, let's bring up this idea that this is not necessarily unusual, right? The nuances and the actual exact details might be different and varied, but I mean, you look at Steve Jobs and how he ran Apple in, yep, the early days, very uncomfortable for certain types of people. And it does suck. Like if you have a lot of skill and you have a lot of talent and you have a lot of vision, it stinks that you can't work or feel comfortable working for this company because of their work environment. But, you know, it's like if you have opportunities, then take advantage of those opportunities. Another example is GE, right? So in the 80s through early 2000s, who was it? Jack Welch.
Yeah.
Right. So they called him Neutron Jack, as a neutron bomb, because neutron bombs kill people, not systems. Right. They don't explode and blow up buildings. They just kill people. And so he implemented this system where the bottom 10% of managers were fired every year, mm-hmm, and yep, and the top 20% were given bonuses and stock options. Right. So that's a crazy churn. By design, he had at least 10% turnover among his white collar managers every year. But during that time, he increased the valuation of GE by 4,000%. So, like, okay.
That's a high percent. Yeah. I mean, you can't argue what Amazon is doing. Like, they're making massive amounts of money.
But the question is, can you have the same output through? I mean, this gets down to what is your preferable management style? Right. Like, even, I mean, this is a very crude measurement, but on Glassdoor, the rating for Amazon is a 3.4. The one for Google is 4.4 out of 5.
Yeah.
So that's significantly higher. And right. I don't know the internals of Google and Amazon, but I can't imagine that Google is, you know, particularly less efficient than Amazon. I mean, actually, these things almost remind me of like stack rankings and things at Microsoft. And so the question, yeah, is, are we accepting that this is an inevitability of any high stress workplace, or are there things we can change? I think the particulars of this are what made it feel egregious. Like, for example, one was that there was something about people reporting on each other, right, where it felt, yeah, less team-oriented and more, let me undermine.
North Korea.
Very
hostile. Yeah. Yeah. No, very hostile. Very like, you know, I will put you down if I can get, yeah, myself up, right?
Yeah.
And this, another thing to talk about, and this gets into a larger problem, and this is an issue with women in the workplace. Like, well, okay, that's a bad way to word it. We don't need any more women. But you talk about taking leave and things like that. Women, yeah, I mean, it is good to have paternity leave, but maternal leave is just necessary. They have to go through that process, but some vary on that. And if you're getting fired because you're trying to take that leave, that to me sometimes gets into that area where you have to start thinking of not even just discrimination, but that's just something that I don't think we should necessarily agree to.
Well, let me throw this out there and then we'll transition into our next topic because it's somewhat related to that. So, you know, and I really don't, I knew I probably came out as a little flippant and cavalier about just saying, you know, get another job. So I
this is how the commentist is run.
just get another job.
Josiah just runs everything here.
There's three of us, so it's really awkward when you figure out who the top bottom 10%
is. Yeah, I'm pretty much gone after this.
but, you know, so I do want to walk that back a little bit and say, I guess I'm not as concerned, one, like I said, because these are highly skilled, highly educated people that do have more opportunities. So I'd like to, you know, prioritize people who have less opportunities. But also, I don't feel like that this is the norm in all the tech sectors, right? Because we're going to be talking about working conditions and work benefits of other well-known tech companies in a second here. And so I think I really feel like Amazon is the outlier here, and it will be corrected by market forces. There's a lot of competition to get really talented people. It can't just be more money, more money, more money. It's got to be this work-life balance, and they're going to lose out on talented people, whether it's an earned, deserved reputation or not. I think less people are going to be applying there. I've already heard just anecdotes on different podcasts that I listen to where a guy said, yeah, I had a friend make it all the way through the interviews. They offered him the job, and he turned him down because he said he just had a bad vibe about their work at Amazon. Yeah. So, you know, so let's talk a little bit about the next topic here, which is workplace benefits. So the two that I want to talk about specifically, I've been in the news.
401ks and health insurance. So what do you guys think?
They've been in the news over the last 2 months, basically. So one is Netflix. Specifically, they announced that they effectively have unlimited leave. Specifically, a full year of paid maternity leave. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the policy, it's actually just a full year of paid leave. You don't have to be a woman who's pregnant. You can take it basically for anything that's, I don't think they use this terminology, but it's similar to FMLA, family medical leave. So, you know, you have a sick parent, just take up to a year. And it doesn't have to be a consecutive year. It's basically up to a year. So you can take your year of leave, paid leave, over, you know, 18 months or something like that as needed.
My kid was born 3 years ago, but he's still really shitty. So I got to take another 3 months off.
And they'll even let you do alternate work schedules, too. So you can do, you know, 4 hour days for the next 3 months while you, you know, you pick up your child from rehabilitation or something like that. Mm-hmm. So really, really flexible. There's another case that I want to talk about, but let's dive into that.
Well, so that I think is something that we need to improve on. Maternity and paternity leave is, I think, something we definitely lag behind in the U.S. There are a lot of European countries that are stronger on that. And it is kind of absurd. I mean, I don't have experience being a mother, but it is an incredible burden. And the fact that people can be in and out and in such a short period of time, I mean, and I think this is something that disproportionately affects women for obvious reasons. Like, there are many times where you got to choose, do I want to keep my job or do I want to have a kid, which is insane. I can understand not having 5 years away, but even, you know, some places they expect you to come back pretty quickly.
Yeah. And in most places, even in the U.S., in a lot of places, it's not paid leave. Right. So it's, you know, these are, you're taking sick days or something like that. And in a lot of work situations, it's not, sick day is not paid. It's just, okay, we're not going to fire you.
Right.
Until you go over your sick time. And in some cases, I've heard anecdotally of friends and friends' children, you know, they were laid off. And it's because they allegedly used too much sick time, but it was their time to use. So, you know, it can be kind of messed up in that and perverse in that situation.
Well, related to that, actually, when you talk about paid time off. So my sister's company is actually implementing it. They're kind of a tech company. And I've heard of other companies doing it. But there are more companies implementing unlimited paid time off.
Yeah.
Now, when people first hear about that, the idea is, wow, this is great. You know, I can take it off. I mean, it has to be improved, but generally they're okay with it. But most people can kind of see through it's more of a ruse. The idea being, when you're at a place where people are sufficiently ambitious, what happens is you sometimes will take vacation because you know it's going to expire. But if you make it unlimited, they never expire. So people never have a reason to take a vacation.
Yeah, yeah.
And it becomes more nefarious in its own way.
Yeah.
And obviously this is more at places where people feel like, I mean, what job do you ever feel like you're done with work? You just don't.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I'm glad you brought it up. You know,
I like to bring that to the podcast.
You know, I think I forget exactly what it is. And I mean, that's indicative of the fact that I don't use all my vacation days. I think I have roughly 20 paid days.
Years.
And I can stack that up to a total of 40 at the beginning of a year.
Right.
And I couldn't tell you how many I have because I know I'm well under. You know, every year I'm going to have it's like rollover minutes. Every year I'm just going to be adding to the pot. So, you're right. That's a really sneaky way of getting more productivity.
Sure. I think this all goes back to, you know, what benefits can you offer beyond just a higher salary, right? For a lot of these tech companies in this ultra competitive world and trying to get, you know, this type of talent now. And I think that's where, you know, Amazon might get hurt. It's because, like you said, you know, people might not take this job now because they hear about these things or not getting certain benefits or, you know, certain perks at working at Google or Facebook, Microsoft, you know, wherever.
Yeah, what kind of chips do they have there? Because really, I want good potato chips.
Yeah, if they're not baked, I'm not coming. I'm not working.
That's a fun. Do you have any questions for us at the end of the year? What kind of chip selection do you have? Do you have Sun Chips or just Lay's? But yeah.
Yeah. The other benefit that I want to talk about is food, right? Mm-hmm. So this was in the news recently. Because about a year ago, the IRS started to signal that they weren't so happy about, this is a big trend in many of the big tech companies out in Silicon Valley, but other companies do this as well, where employees were basically getting free food. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, we're talking like gourmet cafeteria lines that are open for all three meals. And on the insidious side there, you can say, well, it's nice because these people don't have to leave work ever.
Yep.
Right? And you just keep them at their at the headquarters there.
And they do now, like Facebook, Google, they have campuses where people rent when they want to live. I mean, there's a purpose for it too, because real estate is so expensive.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It also keeps you closer to the campus.
Yep,
you
don't that and leave. Busing and stuff
yep,
like
all
that. It's almost like these old mill towns.
Yeah, it really is. It is funny.
Except it's just a bunch of nerds on computers instead of,
you sleep where you work. And, but, you know, so the IRS started signaling that they felt that was a huge benefit and they wanted to tax it. So presumably, you know, Google would have to be charged with figuring out like, okay, based on, you know, if you use this many meals, then it's roughly, what, $12,000 a year and that's being taxed or something like that. I don't know the exact details. The IRS hasn't announced that. And like I said, they said this, they kind of hinted at it last year. And then it came up in the news again because they basically said it's past the pre-exploratory phase and they're going into the exploratory phase as they're actually going to try to do this.
I would love to work at a company where I could basically live and work at a place. So like, I mean, being from...
Well, technically, you do live in one place.
Yeah, well, okay. So having a startup out of my house, I guess, counts like that. But that's what I'm saying. Like, I love that I can just basically roll out of bed, walk 20 feet, and start working. And then, like, if something comes up in the middle of the night or something, like, if I want to just work on something, it's all right there. I mean, obviously, you know, with computers and stuff, you can kind of do that anyway. But, or even just having these extra benefits, like having food just catered for you,
which is such a common thing now, especially there are so many startups nowadays.
Yeah.
It is so common to see places, small places that have this environment. I mean, when you look at any startup, I mean, nobody's wearing suits. Everybody's just wearing jeans and shirts. People are wearing, they're just eating. They have food all around and things like that. I've seen so many tech.
Well, I guess technically my startup did have my refrigerator. So I did provide food.
But
for
you
myself.
Wanted a chef to pour your Soylent for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gotta get those proportions right.
Funny side note, this doesn't have to do with this, but basically when Google was a fledgling company, obviously they weren't making any money. So they ended up having to pay people in shares. One of the people who got paid in shares was the chef. And he was just a regular chef. And that is a very rich chef now.
Yeah.
Because he had, he was like
Facebook guy, 10. The graffiti artist. He got got some shares too. Yeah.
It's insane.
But I want to point out that this type of thing has happened once before. It happened after World War II, where there was a lot of people, a lot of good talent coming back from the military and companies, and the economy was booming like post-war, and companies were fighting to get quality people. Yeah. So what did they do? They started offering healthcare as a benefit.
Oh, okay, sure.
And that's why in this country, you get healthcare through your job, and it makes no sense as a government policy. You know, when Obamacare was coming around, and it's like, well, people are so freaked out by, why would the government give this to us? Well, if you stop and think about it, why would your workplace give you healthcare? It's so bizarre to me, but that's the history of it. It was basically competition in the job market to get people to sign with your company. So, you know, food, what's next? We got healthcare, we got food, we got ping pong tables, entertainment. Yeah. Probably the next thing is to get you a spouse or something like that.
Oh, in China.
I mean, I absolutely need that service.
They have matchmakers on campus. No, you're right. And well, this also gets to the complexity of it because most of the biggest companies definitely.
I guess
do
I should
things.
Work for a younger company before I start looking at that.
Or this company. You want to get married to me? It's legal now.
Yeah.
So this is, it gets a little more complex because, yeah, the benefits they're providing. I mean, it's a joke, but people talk about how one big thing at Google is they have these, like, nap pods. So you can nap. It's like a helmet you put on, kind of, and you can take a nap. I mean, I don't know how you tax that, but there are the things that people are doing to get people to their company is, it's getting more.
Yeah, and, you know, perks like nice furniture, lounge areas, recreation, that sort of thing, that's harder, I think, would be harder to tax because there's no tangible thing, but everybody needs to eat, and if I weren't eating at work for free, I would be paying for my food.
Yep.
So that's a huge cost savings to me, and it gives me more expendable money as an employee of that company. So, I don't want to see everything taxed. I'm of the mindset of let's just go to a basic flat tax with no loopholes and just actually have people pay what they owe.
Okay, Herman.
But we can move on.
Hold on. I guess what the real question is, when we blow up and we are employing thousands of people, what kind of rulers are we going to be?
I'm going to say the bottom 10% need to buy me lunch.
How much food can you eat, man?
Hey, man, you pick a day and you rotate through the bottom 10%. Bring me some.
They all just go in line during lunch, and he's like, "No, no."
It's like Jabba the Hutt.
Jabba, no.
Josie the Hutt, yeah.
Josie the Hutt. There it is. All right, so let's move on to the changeup, which, if you haven't heard, is a new segment where we have a series of rotating questions that we like to talk about things related to our lives and what we're doing. This week's changeup is brought to you by Audible. Sorry, listening to anything?
I just finished up Armada, which is the second book by Ernest Cline, the guy who wrote Ready Player One.
Is it good?
It was pretty good. I enjoyed it. It's a little, you know, like I said last time, you can start to see certain trends, and it starts to get, I mean, after the second book, it's you're kind of thinking about, okay, well, if he keeps this up in his third book, I might not want to read
that.
And the irony
Ready
is...
Ready Player Two.
There's a lot of it's very derivative, but there is a slight twist, but it's not twisty enough that, you know, because the irony is that in the whole book, he keeps referencing all this other science fiction. And he's like, oh, yeah, this person in the real world kept thinking about this science fiction movie and that science fiction book. And that's what the story is panning out to be. And you're like, OK, yeah, I get it. How about having...
Clearly, he's just like a big nerd for the decade. And just
he's a big
just
nerd,
like
and he's just name-dropping.
Yeah.
And after a while, you're like, okay, let's see something original. And,
yeah.
But it was fun. It was fun. I think it's a little harder to get a hit after your second book, especially when the first book really spoke to me.
Yeah.
The second book is speaking on the same themes.
Right, right.
Just really quickly, I so the book I just started is Howl's Moving Castle And
Howl's Moving
Howl. Castle. Howl's Moving Castle.
Howl.
Yeah.
Is
Howl?
It Howl?
Howl?
Howl.
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 Like, Howl. Howl. You just wanted me to. Yeah. Yeah, Howl's Moving Castle. It's a movie published by Disney, but directed by Miyazaki. Is it Miyazaki? The guy who did Spirited Away.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, and, that is Miyazaki. I didn't know that was one of his. Oh, I do know what you're talking
about. Adapted that book as a movie.
Adapted that
book. Yeah. He's raising. It's going to college now. So it's really. I saw the movie recently, and so I'm reading the book, or the book is being read.
So you like to say that, you know, the book spoke to you, and it was spoken to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is the dual advantage.
Yeah, so you can get those titles. Excuse me, and many more on Audible, and by going to our link, which is audibletrial.com/rolltohit, we provide you with a free audiobook and free 30-day trial.
All right, so change up.
Oh, you're taking over. He's already becoming a dictator.
Yeah. What's my title? Darth Editor?
Darth Editor, yeah.
Editor in Darth.
Yeah. Well, the bottom 10% can't start that.
No, that's true.
So the change up.
I'm the bottom 33%.
What have you been watching recently? Robbius?
All right. So I watched, I'm terrible. One of those people.
Farscape?
No. Although I am planning on watching that again just to piss you off.
Cowboy Bebop?
No. So I'm one of those people where I'll sit down and I'm like, all right, I'm going to watch a movie on Netflix. And then I just scroll for like a half an hour and then just get frustrated. And like, I don't know what to watch. Yeah. So I just give up. Right. So anyway, I had someone that I was watching stuff with, and luckily she's much more decisive than I am. So she picked the movie Chef, which is, I don't know how to describe it. I don't know the main actor in it. But anyway,
did you actually see this movie?
I did. I wasn't paying attention. No. It's about a chef who falls on.
There's this thing called IMDb. Stands for Internet Movie Database.
Yes. Thank you. So it's a chef that falls on hard times and ends up getting a food truck and goes across country with his son. It's very touching. It's very moving. Anyway, and Sean's going to hate me for saying this, but it had by far the best soundtrack.
The best
soundtrack ever of any movie, because basically every song, it was like all jazz, like New Orleans style jazz, and then like good rock music. It had like a lot of like covers of songs that you would not expect, like Wu-Tang's Cream was covered, but like an instrumental version. It's like one of the things where you're like, you start hearing it like, wait a minute, I know this song, but this isn't how I know it.
Yeah.
Anyway,
there are the actors. I don't know how I've never heard of this. So John Favreau is the main guy, John Leguizamo.
Yeah.
Then there's Scarlett Johansson.
You didn't recognize John Favreau?
Shut up. You don't know who he is.
Yeah.
I do know who he is.
What else is he in?
He's in Swingers.
I don't know what that is.
He's a director of Iron Man. When you see him, well, you saw him because you saw his shit movie.
He's in Shawshank Redemption as Fat Ass Number 2.
Scarlett Johansson's in it. Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah, I said
Sophia
I didn't know
Vergara,
who the main.
Amy Sedaris, Robert Downey Jr., Russell Peters. There's a lot of people in this. How have I never heard of this? We should watch this sometime.
Yeah, it's a good movie, and it has the best soundtrack I've ever heard.
Ever?
Ever. Okay.
Did you rate it 10 out of 10 on Amazon?
No, but I did download all the songs on Groove Music. So,
okay.
Groove Music.
I got the name right. I got the name right. Xbox Music is now Groove Music.
Related to this, so Rob was the one who introduced me to Samurai Champloo, which is a good anime series. We're not huge anime watchers, but we like that one. So please, if you can, if anyone's listening to this, just write in reasons why Rob should watch Cowboy Bebop. Done by the same, I believe, director, same kind of idea and style. Just write in
for
all
those
the
of you,
reasons why he's
those of you.
He likes Firefly, but he doesn't like Cowboy Bebop. He likes Samurai Champloo.
I should explain that I do not take Sean's recommendations.
Well, no, this is—you'll take one recommendation from a new person, and then after that, ignore all the recommendations from that. So, my recommendation to Rob, which he took, was to watch Firefly, and I recommended that he watched it within
previously recommended.
Yeah, but he binge watched it, you know. But that, I've known Rob for what, 3 years now, four years, so I can't recommend anything to him. So,
what else have you tried to recommend to me?
Everything.
Everything.
Literally,
I've
everything.
Listened to stuff that he's told
some
me about.
Of the best everythings.
I feel like at least Josiah knows better than to recommend me things anymore, because I can't think of the last time he's recommended anything to me. Sean just recommends the same freaking things over and over.
Hoping,
and over.
You know, it's a game of attrition. Just eventually you're just
I'm going to secretly watch The Wire and not tell you, and then just like drop really subtle hints that I've seen it just to piss you off.
Oh man, this day isn't going well. Shit.
Well, that's not subtle at all. I know what that is. That is subtle. See it.
Wow, this is the most heated change up yet. Anyway,
what are you watching, Chuck?
So I just finished up True Detective Season 2.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Which True Detective Season 1 was awesome. And for those who don't know, it's an anthology series, so each season is completely different.
Is this the one that has like all the big like actors in it?
It does a lot.
It's the one that, the recent one, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's new. It's only on the second season. Yeah, so the first season had the main two were Matthew McConaughey and...
See, you can't think of
John Favreau.
I was just going to say, it's, Freddie Prinze Jr. No, wow.
Marky Mark.
This is terrible. Wait, just give me 2 seconds. Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson. They were great in it. Whatever. Anyway, True Detective Season 2, really lambasted because it was just an incredibly convoluted plot. But for anyone who didn't like True Detective Season 2, watch through the end. I like how it pulled together in the end. It is still, the plot is literally inscrutable. A reviewer said this, and I kind of agree with it. I think they almost didn't want you to understand it. Either that, or they're trying to go so hard for the theory, the noir idea of where it's just so complex that you're just supposed to be really difficult, and only the real sleuths are going to figure out all the connections. But it was just inscrutable. But I like the way it ended, the way the things that happened to the characters. It was a decent ending. Definitely not True Detective Season 1. Definitely not. But I'm still... I'm going to watch season 3 because I liked it enough.
Cool. I started rewatching Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Nice.
I love that series. And also I am watching season 8 of Doctor Who.
Oh.
So it just came out on Netflix. It's a year behind. I think season 9 is already midway through. And so season 8 just came out on Netflix. So I'm watching that. And it's, if you know anything about Doctor Who... The mythology is that when he has a death event, when he should die as an alien of this race called the Time Lords, when he should have died, he regenerates. And when he regenerates, he has all his old memories, but he has a new physical form and typically a new personality.
That's how they explain it.
Yeah. This season 8 starts a new actor, a new personality, and it's pretty interesting. And they... they kind of alluded to this doctor because Doctor Who is a time traveler. And in one of the big crossover episodes, they had several doctors from the more recent shows. Plus this future one, they just showed his eyebrows because at that time he had been contracted to do the future seasons. Mm-hmm. So they showed him, and he had a key part in destroying one of the other alien races that have always been very warlike across the galaxy.
Genocide's a good way to start.
Yeah, so they're showing him to be kind of a much darker, meaner doctor. And it's interesting.
That's cool.
How do you like him?
It's the gritty reboot.
Do you think he's a good doctor?
It is the gritty reboot. It's a little over the top. I mean, overbearing. Like they keep
he's
saying,
the joke.
He keeps asking, am I a good person? Am I good this? And so they're really like trying to say, yep, is he good?
Ambiguity.
Can he be good? But it's interesting enough. I should
mention I've been watching every single summer sci-fi show, like Falling Sky, Defiance, Killjoys, like it's just not the same. But Walking Dead spinoff show starts Sunday.
Oh, cool. Already? That's crazy.
Yeah, so I'm
They must
I'm
have been
pretty
in production pretty early.
Yeah.
Is there anyone from the main show?
No, it's a completely different cast. Although they did leave it open to the possibility of the two meeting at some point, but I don't know.
So what's the spinoff?
So from what I understand of it, it's basically, I think it takes place in, I want to say LA, but out west.
Okay.
So it's away from Atlanta, like the main storyline. But this actually goes back to when the outbreak starts.
Gotcha.
And the initial reaction of everything, all the shit hitting the fan. And
so... West was the epicenter? Like it started out west?
No, I don't know that it started out there, but that's where this story is. So it's completely different cast, completely different storylines and stuff like that. I think it's only 6 episodes, the first season.
Cool.
So it's meant to be a shorter, shorter length. But
it sounds like a miniseries.
I'm excited for it. But anyway, so that will wrap up the change up. Again, you can get your free Audible trial by going to audibletrial.com/rolltohit. And let's move on to our last topic.
Cool. So the last topic of the day, I want to talk about ad blocks. So Adblock in general has been controversial from the start. I mean, for those who don't know, it blocks internet ads. And it's extremely well made in that it blocks banner ads. I mean, pop-ups have been gone forever, but YouTube ads, a lot of pre-roll stuff on video, video sites or sites that show video. And it's been controversial because one problem is the main source of revenue for a lot of websites is are ads. The thing is, there's already been essentially some kind of contract between people and websites that they just expect things to be free. A lot of places are not subscription-based, and because of that, everything has to be subsidized through ads. Now, like I said, it has been changing over the time because this has become a serious problem. As Adblock has become bigger and more popular, more websites are specifically saying things like, please don't use your Adblock or whitelist us. And the official Adblock app has even done things where they've, by default, whitelisted some sites, I believe, that paid them. But it's controversial in itself whether or not people should be using Adblock because this is how they're getting their money. But even further than that, I want to talk about that. And it's interesting actually building into us as, you know, we're launching a new site. I mean, it's already up, but we're thinking of adding ads. And we think about the fact that, you know, if all of our users, which a lot of them are probably going to be tech savvy, if they're all using Adblock, that means they're not getting our ads. And so we're not seeing anything from it. But in addition to that, Marco Arment, who's a former Tumblr guy, he wrote Paper, and he did another really good apps. And he's a pretty outspoken app developer, and he's a smart guy. He had a long blog post where he talked to condense it. He essentially said that one reason why he has never used Adblock traditionally for all those past reasons.
Yep.
He knows that this is how he gets his free content. But he's been using it more because he feels like the contract between the user and the website has broken down in that now it's gotten to the point where you don't exactly know what you're giving up, and that most websites are using tracking cookies. They're mining more. It's not just there's an ad that you can look at or not look at. They're looking at far more things. If you use like an add-on like Ghostery, it's used to block tracking cookies. And what's also useful, you get to see how many tracking cookies are on sites. One site I visit a lot is The Verge, and they are notorious for all kinds of tracking cookies, seeing where, and so you don't really know where your data is going. When you see an ad, you understand, I'm looking at this, I could either not look at it, but when you start looking at tracking cookies and things like that, you don't actually know what information they are taking from you. And so how do you guys feel about how Adblock and how ads are changing?
So it's interesting you bring this up now because switching over, or I guess upgrading to Windows 10 over the past couple months, I've been more incentivized to try out the Edge browser that they put out, which is a huge upgrade from Internet Explorer. But it does not have ad blocking of Chrome, which is what I typically use. So it's funny because like I just did not realize how many ads are on really sites that I go to all the time, right?
What's all this empty space?
Well, it's not even that. It's just like any like The Verge or GameSpot, or, you know, the Polygon, like a lot of these sites that I go to a lot, or you know, Windows Central, things like that, have tons of ads all over the place, or even in front of
YouTube
videos,
pre-roll ads. Most of them have it. It's different when you see it like a 5 second, oh, I can skip this ad now, but when you see when they put those full 30 seconds,
you're
like, my this is taking a lot longer to see my content.
I will say though, like, and obviously like I might see it differently now that we're trying to monetize the site and put ads in, and think about how we're gonna, you know, monetize some of this and pay for this, but it doesn't bother me that much. Like 15-second ads, like they're annoying. Like, you know, pre-roll ads or whatever are annoying, but like I understand why they exist. And it
one problem I
me.
Do have though is there are a lot of websites that have short videos, so you end up having a 15-second pre-roll ad, right, a 1 minute intense video, a 15-second post-roll ad, and then or something, or like a pre-roll of the next video, and you're like, I just am watching a 1 minute video.
Yeah, I mean that. Yeah, so I could see that, but like the only time I really get annoyed by ads is there are certain websites that, you know, when I look up rumors of tech stuff, there's just some sites that just basically recycle information from other sites, but they literally have like 20 to 30 ads, including like banner pop-ups, videos that come up that actually slow down my computer.
Yeah.
So like that's when it becomes like, all right, you need to calm down. Like, but that's way too much.
But you know, it's funny. The only reason why they have that many is probably because
to make up for the
ad
people
block.
Using AdBlock, yeah,
probably. Although I guess AdBlock blocks all
just,
of them.
They're
so
just
they're
not.
No, they were
just
greedy, Sean.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
were greedy assholes
greedy.
Before AdBlock.
I will say,
I assure you.
Sure,
we
sure.
are very good, and we're only thinking about putting a couple ads on the site. Like, there's a difference between that and like having 20, you know, videos flying all over the place in your face. Like that, there's a difference. So like that pisses me off, and that gets annoying. But like. Having a couple, like normal sites, I only have a couple ads, don't really bother me that much.
But one thing, I mean, I can't say this with certainty, but I would assume the proliferation of ad block also devalued ads in general. So that led to people needing more ads.
Right.
I don't think any website really wants to have ads, but they know they can make more money that way, obviously. So I can't even imagine what you can make a decent amount of money through AdSense, but the click-through rates, when you compare it to other forms of advertising, I mean, they're very different because you see not many people are clicking in. Most people are blocking it for all of these aforementioned reasons.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, ads are kind of a necessary evil, and with certain apps, like if you talk about free versus paid apps, most of the free apps make more money because... Because we've had this kind of conversation before with
free to play
stuff, yeah. You know.
Yeah, like, by the way, I forgot to mention, Threes came out as free. He was notorious because it had been ripped off so many times. He actually specifically said, when we went free to play, we make more money than our paid app. And they had a very good app.
Yeah, because, I mean, you can only buy it once, but you can get the ad revenue again and again. And I think Flappy Bird was the same way,
sure,
right?
Sure, yeah, that's true.
So, you know, there is that intoxicating opportunity to make a lot more money.
Do you use AdBlock?
I do not use AdBlock. I do use Ghostry. I don't want the tracking, but I don't use AdBlock because I don't really mind it. I feel like I have enough self-control that, you know, if I go to a website that's about Apple rumors and Mac rumors and I this and I that, and then I see an interesting ad for a case, sure, I'll click on it. If I just bought a pair of shoes and I go to a site and they're like, hey, do you want to buy a pair of shoes? I'm like, no, you're stupid. Stop bothering me. And I just ignore it. So, you know, I feel like if I'm in the mindset and the right ad pops up, sure, I'll do that. But
I keep getting ads for Russian mail order brides. I don't know why every site has.
I will say, like, and Sean, you already brought this up, but it's that trade off, right? Like, this is kind of the price you have to pay in order to get free content. Because at the end of the day, you're not paying to use a lot of these sites or watch these videos or anything like that. And, you know.
Well, this wouldn't hold water legally, but would you guys just, I guess, from a moral standpoint, ever consider using AdBlock without any whitelisting almost like a form of piracy where you're essentially. That is their main revenue source, and you're taking... I mean, like I said, it's clearly... Legally, that doesn't make any sense, but...
I mean, well, even would I subscribe... Would I pay monthly to use the sites that I'm using now instead of having ads, I think, right? Is another question.
Yeah.
That's another question, and actually, I do. I do pay... talking about other revenue streams, I subscribe to Patreon for Daily Tech News Show, shows by Patrick Beja, who is a guest contributor to Daily Tech News Show, and he has a couple of his own shows about video games and one he calls the Phileas Club, where he just talks with people, friends that he knows from all around the world. So I do pay Patreon subscriptions to them. I also pay a Patreon subscription for Freakonomics podcast. Mm-hmm. And, well, that one goes to the radio station because it's WNYC, I think. And to Serial, which is, again, I think it goes to...
General Mills podcast.
Yes, that, yeah. But, I do pay for content when that option is available to me. I don't pay for, let's say, Wall Street Journal or New York Times, because I've never been a big consumer of their media. But these other shows, like... Literally, Daily Tech News Show, I listen to every weekday of my life.
What about the tech sites you go to every day? Would you pay a subscription to use those?
Some of them, yes. Some of them, no. Because the thing about some of the sites, kind of like what you said, there's a lot of just republishing. Even sites that I really like and enjoy, as I've started to add to my RSS feed, I've started to realize, like, these guys that I've been enjoying for the last 2 years just repost.
Yeah.
Stories from these other two sites.
So common.
And, you know, so it makes me feel a little, little greasy and slimy when I visit those copying sites, especially as a content creator ourselves. So I'm more comfortable with paying for video or audio versus writing, because it's just too easy to copy, I think.
Well, you guys bring up a good point. One thing that was born out of this issue is that there have been more discussions of going the subscription route, which, I mean, obviously subscriptions, magazine subscriptions, newspaper subscriptions, they've always existed, but it didn't really happen as much on the web. But right. I believe Penny Arcade raised money, I believe, on Kickstarter. There are a lot of Patreon things to support content.
But that's relatively new, though.
Yeah, it is new, but it's interesting how this is...
Well, there was always the PayPal tip jar, right, that sort of thing.
Yeah, Wikipedia did that.
But I guess so. This is seen as an alternative method of funding. And one cool thing, like for example, there was one Dark Souls video maker that
just
I
just have to
has
mention
watched.
Dark Souls
well,
every show.
The reason why, and I've said this to
we
you
should
before,
have like a shows.
We should like have a jar tally where Sean has to pay a dollar every time he mentions Dark Souls.
We should have like a chalkboard and just tally.
We should. You know, we should.
Number of shows that Dark Souls was mentioned consecutively.
It'd be all 45 of them.
I want to point it out for one reason, because, I mean, all he makes is Dark Souls videos, yet his Patreon is something like, I think, $12,000 a month, which blows my mind. But the advantage is, because he's getting so much money, he doesn't put pre-roll ads on his YouTube videos, because you're essentially paying to get rid of the ads.
Yeah.
Penny Arcade, I think I said, did this. I forgot who it was. There was a famous writer who decided to make his blog private, and you had to pay a certain subscription to access it. And it felt kind of novel. You could even... Not the same.
Yeah, but these are all people who had huge followings before they monetized.
It's difficult if you want to make a name for yourself, sure. Yeah. And how you monetize at the beginning. But I'm saying that option is available. It's
right.
not
no,
just
no,
a barrage
yeah,
of
absolutely,
ads.
Absolutely.
And this was the whole backlash against native advertising. But the reason why it happened is because, I mean, there wasn't enough enough money coming from click-through, because there weren't enough people actually looking at these ads. Mm-hmm. So native advertising seemed like a smart combination. How can we trick our viewers? But we might see more and more subscription-based systems, because you can't... Adblock is just really good, and a lot of people use it. It's bigger than maybe they expected it would be.
Yeah. Is that a hint of things to come for this podcast, Ron? No, before we had this conversation, I think we were thinking about potentially doing a Patreon for some of the shows. Maybe not this one. We need more listeners. But, yeah.
Tell your friends.
You know, so Tom Merritt, who does the Daily Tech News show, you know, he uses the way he puts it, and, is that, you know, you pay value for value, right? So if you feel like you're getting something out of a show, then give something back. And he makes a big point of, you know, well, if you can't pay to the Patreon, they do have an online store where you can get a mug, a t-shirt, that sort of thing. If you can't do that, you do one-time contribution, any amount. If you can't do that or don't feel like that's the same value that you're getting, then, you know, just... pass it along on Twitter and tell a friend, that sort of thing. So I think, you know, he respects his audience and is willing to accept whatever they want to give. I think that's a big part of it. You know, and you have that kind of pay it forward mentality and that good karma going for you, and see what happens, right?
So you're going to tell them what our Patreon is after saying all
oh,
that?
Oh, you actually
oh,
set one
there.
Up?
It's there,
Snap,
my friend.
Look at this guy. He's all about the money.
Yeah. So for all of those reasons that Josiah mentioned, if you feel like we are providing quality content and you'd like to help us out, you can help us by going to patreon.com/theunwind.
Or patreon.com/Josiah? I don't
know. Nah, if you doesn't. Only like Josiah.
You know, there probably is a Josiah that you'd be paying for.
I better get that domain right now.
All right, so that's going to do it for this week's episode of The Unwind. Thank you so much for listening. You can subscribe to us on the iTunes and Stitcher. We will be putting video content soon enough on YouTube, as well as these clips. Please share us with your friends. If you like what we're doing, leave us some comments. You can submit questions and topics by going to thecommentist.com. That is where you go now.
It's like, easier to spell.
Yes, it's very
the
easy.
The Commentist.
So be sure to check out our other shows on the network. We have Roll the Hit, which a lot of us are on. All three of us are on. We also have Kiss the Crest, which is about football, the real football, that Sean and I are both on, and plenty more shows. So, yeah, and we'll see you next week.
Free food is the best kind of food.
Pyaw!